You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
The logic of this kind of ethical method, you see results in such guideline propositions as that we ought to love people and use things. And the essence of immorality is to love things and use people. And by things, we mean not only material objects of desire, but abstractions like moral principles too. And it results in such characteristic propositions as that we ought to live by the law of love and never by any love of law.
That's the late Joseph Fletcher, father of situation ethics, speaking during a 1971 debate at San Diego State University with Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, ironically talking about loving people and using things. His situation ethics, as it has come to be applied in bioethics, has essentially reduced people to things, or you've got to do an awful lot to qualify in to be a person rather than a thing, according to Fletcher's own measures that he articulated in the 70s. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 9th of January. We're going to be talking about the bioethics that has resulted from the situation ethics of Joseph Fletcher. Wesley Smith will be our guest. A little bit later, we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker on the Apostle Peter in the house of the Gentile Cornelius in Acts chapter 10. You can join us with questions or comments or call in number 1-877-623-MY-IE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or the Issues Etc. comment line for our beloved on-demand listeners, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about bioethics and the situation ethics of Joseph Fletcher, Wesley Smith, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine, and a recent column for First Things titled Joseph Fletcher's Dark Dreams Become Our Reality. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, thank you. You know, that clip made Joseph Fletcher seem soft and fuzzy, but he was actually a harsh utilitarian, and as you mentioned, his purpose was to turn some people into objects. And unfortunately, he is known as the patriarch of bioethics. In other words, his approach has become, in many ways, the mainstream view of that very powerful sector of our society.
The last time we talked, Wesley, I had asked a question about kind of the underpinning philosophy in all of the bioethical issues that we are facing today and the challenges to the intrinsic dignity and value of life from beginning to end. You said, well, that was going to be a long conversation. Is this that conversation?
Well, it's certainly the beginning of it. I wrote about these issues in Culture of Death, which you mentioned in the introduction. But I think it's important to go back and let people understand that some of the things we're dealing with today do not just arise kind of sui sponte out of the ether. There has been an effort in bioethics since the beginning in the 1970s to turn some human beings into lesser people who are often today called non-persons. Fletcher talked about criteria for humanhood, meaning you have to have, it's not being human that matters, it's having certain capacities. That has been shifted now to whether one is a person or not a person, because obviously somebody is a human being if they have a biological human organism. But this is where this began. And it's very important for people to understand that all of this talk that happens up in the upper atmosphere, we'll say, in scholarly symposia, in books that the mainstream media tends to not cover, has very real-world impact when it comes to how we treat the weak and vulnerable in this country. For example, Joseph Fletcher was very insistent that we engage in genetic engineering. And this is back in the 70s. He was looking forward because he believed that it would be better for people to be artificially created, if you will, than go through natural processes. And now we are getting to the place where that is beginning to be able to happen. Not only do we have IVF, but we have what's called pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, where IVF embryos are tested for quality control. Those that do not pass what the creators want are thrown out as medical waste or perhaps used in experimentation. It permits sex selection abortion, or not abortion, actually, sex selection in terms of implanting which embryos you want to implant. And we're moving with something called CRISPR, which we talked about last time, to literally be able to genetically engineer the human species down the generations. And we're doing that without any real regulation or international protocols to direct this powerful technology. This is exactly what Joseph Fletcher wanted. One of my plans is to soon talk about a book called Permission to Destroy Life Unworthy of Life. That was in the early 1920s, and it presaged all of this euthanasia and assisted suicide advocacy, calling the killing of people who were terminally ill or killing of people that the authors called idiots as a, quote, healing treatment, close quote. We are now seeing the mentally ill euthanized in Belgium and Netherlands. We are seeing organ harvesting and euthanasia conjoined, which Joseph Fletcher would absolutely thrill to, not only in those two countries, but also in Canada, which has recently enacted a nationwide euthanasia project at the order of its Supreme Court. So what is really depressing is that it didn't have to be that way. There was a Christian theologian named Paul Ramsey who was contesting, if you will, with Joseph Fletcher for the heart and soul of what became bioethics. And unfortunately, most of what Paul Ramsey wrote is out of print. There was recently a reissue of his book, The Patient as a Person, and the very irony of that is that one of the contributions of bioethics is to permit people to refuse unwanted medical treatment, not to be forced to be hooked up to machines as it was once the case. The person who advocated for that was Paul Ramsey, the Christian theologian, and yet he ended up losing the battle of ideas in bioethics to Joseph Fletcher, even though he had a truly humane and dignified approach to these important issues.
So if you would kind of summarize what Fletcher held out as, he called them, criteria or indicators by which an individual's worth would be literally measured.
Right. He said if you did not have enough of these criteria, you were basically not a human, and therefore you could be treated as an object. They included minimum intelligence. He said, quote, score too low and one is deemed mere biological life. Self-awareness, which he said was essential to the role of personality. A sense of futurity. He said subhuman animals do not look forward in time. Memory, communication, disconnection from others is, if it is irreparable, is dehumanization. Neocortical function. In the absence of the synthesizing function of the cerebral cortex, the person is non-existent. Such persons are objects, not subjects. So what he's really saying here, And we've seen advocacy for this in contemporary bioethics, is that there's such a thing as a human non-person. And those human non-persons, so-called, include all the unborn, embryos and fetuses. It can include the newborns, and it can include people like my mother who died of Alzheimer's disease, or people like Terry Schiavo. And under this view, which is rampant in bioethics, it's not universally held, but it is certainly the mainstream view, People who are not considered persons, say because they're not self-aware over time, have lower value than you or I would because we are self-aware over time, and hence we can be used as objects. Therefore, you see much advocacy for killing people like Terry Schiavo for their organs in bioethics. You see advocacy among some such as Peter Singer, Princeton University, for the propriety of infanticide, which Fletcher was for, and he called it postnatal abortion. So these kinds of ideas have potential real-world consequences, and as I point out in the article in First Things, the things that he advocated in the 70s are happening today in the 2000s.
So the term that Fletcher used, and it seems, I guess it was a technical term for him, but it seems just repugnant to us nowadays, was idiot. What did he have to say about those whom he regarded as human idiots?
Which, of course, came out of the there was a lot of talk about idiots in eugenics. And here's what he said, and this is a quote from Fletcher, and I wish you had this on tape. Idiots are not, never were, and never will be in any degree responsible because they cannot understand the consequences of action. Idiots, that is to say, are not human. The problem they pose is not lack of sufficient mind, but of any mind at all. No matter how euphoric their behavior might be, they are outside the pale of human integrity, close quote. And what that came about, that statement, that awful, ugly, bigoted statement. And this is the patriarch of bioethics, according to Al Johnson, who's one of the historians of the movement. That came about because he was at a symposium, Fletcher, where they were talking about treatment of babies born with serious disabilities. And a doctor got up and said, listen, I have a child who is my patient. You know, he's what we would say is profoundly developmentally disabled, but he's happy and he's certainly a human being. And this was Joseph Fletcher's sniffing put down of that belief by the doctor that his developmentally disabled patient should be considered a fully equal human being. This was bigotry, invidious discrimination. And if you talk that way about somebody of a different race, you would be called to account. Yet people like Peter Singer, Joseph Fletcher, many others in bioethics can say that people with human beings that do not have sufficient cognitive capacities can be treated as non-persons, and it's really insidious.
How is it that Fletcher's ideas made their way into bioethics?
Well, you had this field emerging in the late 60s and in the 70s because you had high-tech medicine coming online, and you had to have a debate. How do we deal with these new kinds of dilemmas that we are facing? And doctors, it seems to me, as I did my research for Culture of Death, kind of took a step back in terms of medical ethics. And so you ended up with theologians, philosophers like Fletcher. Fletcher had, by the way, been an Episcopalian priest who turned an atheist. So you had moral philosophers, theologians, and others such as that getting involved in this kind of dialogue. How do we decide how to create medical ethics and public health care policies for this emerging era in which medicine is really advancing exponentially? And the problem is that the majority view came to represent Joseph Fletcher's perspectives. Now, everybody's not as crass in their statements as Fletcher, but his utilitarianism really came to predominate in the field. So today, if somebody is a bioethicist, generally they will, perhaps not as crassly and crudely, not crudely, but bluntly stated as Fletcher, might not say what he says, but they will go along with this idea that there's such a thing as a human non-person. They will go along with the idea that, Fletcher did not go along with this, by the way. He was specifically focused on humans. But what Peter Singer did after Joseph Fletcher, I call Peter Singer son of Fletcher, is he said, okay, if we're going to have this kind of utilitarian view that the purpose of this field is to prevent suffering and eliminate suffering, which of course becomes eliminating the sufferer. Fletcher was wildly in favor of euthanasia. He said, then Peter Singer said, we should also extend it to the animal realm so that if animals are suffering, that we have to give them equal consideration with people. Otherwise, you're what he calls speciesist, meaning if you treat a human being differently as an animal simply because we're human, you're a speciesist, which is as odious in this view as a racist. Now, many in bioethics adopted that view. It's really shocking. And when I did the research for Culture of Death, I was just stunned at how many of the most prominent bioethicists in this country and around the world accept this kind of utilitarian mindset. Now, often those who do not have that view have a modifier in front of the term bioethicist. So you might say Catholic bioethicist or conservative bioethicist. Somebody like Leon Cass, who headed the President's Council on Bioethics under George W. Bush, which is probably the most prominent bioethics council ever derived, and it got involved in the stem cell issue and so forth. Most of the mainstream bioethicists attacked it vociferously. Why? Because Leon Cass believed in the intrinsic dignity of human life, and that was viewed as anathema by many of the most prominent bioethicists who teach at Princeton, Harvard, Yale, and those types of places. And these are the people teaching the doctors of tomorrow, the nurses of tomorrow, the government leaders of tomorrow, the business tycoons of tomorrow. And it's very, very concerning to me. And a lot of these attitudes then seep into bioethics committees at local hospitals and so forth. I'm not saying that healthcare has become an unethical enterprise. In fact, I think it's the doctors and nurses who practice in the trenches that keep it ethical. But if you left it up to the big brains in the bioethics and medical intelligentsia world, you'd have healthcare rationing, you'd have assisted suicide and euthanasia, you might have infanticide, you'd have late-term abortion, you'd have genetic engineering and so forth, because that is the view of the mainstream view of bioethics.
Wesley Smith is our guest. He'll be with us for a few minutes on the other side of the break. We're talking about bioethics and the situation ethics of Joseph Fletcher. Wesley is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of the book Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. Stay tuned.
Listen to the best of the Church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These 6 engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholz. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
I'm only human, of flesh and blood, I'm made.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about bioethics and the situation ethics of Joseph Fletcher Wesley Smith, Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. Wesley, by way of kind of countering what is now certainly started with men like Joseph Fletcher, but now found its way into the mainstream of bioethics, is it sufficient simply to say we have to begin not with, like in Fletcher's case, the situation or some sort of utilitarian greater good as an abstraction, but we need to begin with the concrete reality of the intrinsic value of every human being from beginning to end?
Yes, I do think that's important. And I think that we have to work out, and there is, you know, been a lot of discussion along that line and analysis along that line. The problem is that much of these discussions in bioethics, unless there's a major case like the Terry Schiavo case or something, they occur above the conscious awareness of the people, because the media, you know, they cover Kim Kardashian, you know, and whether she's exposed or behind, but they won't look into some of these very important issues. And the work I try to do is to pay attention to what's happening in those spheres, and in my writing show people, and you know, what's going on, what the plans are for our healthcare system and our public policies and so forth. I have, at least for now, I do not believe these debates can be won in the ivory tower, because too many of the people who are the professors at these major schools and who are part of the medical intelligentsia, too many of them have already bought into this mindset. They believe in healthcare rationing. They believe in what's called the quality of life year, healthcare rationing system, quality adjusted life year, where some people who have a good quality of life are deemed to have a better, more worthy of receiving certain treatments than people who are deemed to have a lesser quality of life. But you know, I think Main Street does not agree with that. And if we're able, and that's why I appreciate how you have me on your show on a regular basis. If we're able to let people who are impacted by these potential policies and proposals know what's going on, they will say, no, this is not what I want. Because if we allow the utilitarian mindset of bioethics to control, they will basically be imposing an approach on people with which people disagree. And therefore, it is incumbent upon us, those of us who see what's happening, to try to make this stuff as widely known as possible, because the more light you shine on it, the less likely some of these very odious proposals are to occur. And let me, just as an example, I mentioned earlier, there's abundant article after article after article of prominent bioethicists saying, somebody should not have to be dead before they're a donor. All that matters is consent. And the idea being, we should be able to take somebody, if the family consents, like Terry Schiavo or somebody of that sort, and kill them for their organs, because the people who would receive the organs need them much more than somebody who they would deem as a non-person. Well, that's not only breaking every promise of organ transplant medicine when it was instituted, but I don't believe it is something people will accept, the idea that we should kill somebody for their organs. It would be deemed monstrous by people. So every time I come across one of those articles, I try to publicize it. And the more you publicize that kind of attitude, that kind of advocacy, the less likely it is to happen, because people are not going to put up with it, in my opinion.
And in that case, Wesley, what people are going to do is say, well, my son just re-upped his driver's license in the state of Illinois. You are asked a standard question. Do you wish to be an organ donor? You simply tick a box on a form, and it's added to the code that's in your driver's license. I can imagine people saying, now, wait a minute. What am I actually saying yes to here? Exactly. Am I consenting to some future law that may allow them to kill me for my organs?
Well, and right now, organ donation is an ethical enterprise. But if some of these ideas go into effect, then I think a lot of people would say, wait a second, I don't want to be a organ donor, because I want to make sure that I'm really and truly dead before I'm an organ donor. And just another example of presumed consent. So there's an effort to, in order to increase the supply of organs, which of course is to be desired if it's done ethically and morally. The idea is that we will presume that you have consented to organ donation unless you say otherwise. In other words, it reverses the current approach, meaning you have to opt out instead of opt in. Well, let's say you've got a loved one in a hospital and they're saying, you know, we don't think that this person's quality of life is worth living. We're pushing you to stop medical treatment. What is that going to do to the trust of healthcare? It's going to destroy it. And then you have this feudal care idea, which is very big in bioethics, that doctors should be able to refuse wanted life-sustaining treatment based on their view of the quality of life of the patient and whether the money is worth spending on that patient. You can join that with the idea of presumed consent and the coercion that's involved in the idea of forcing people off of wanted care. I think it's a prescription for a great deal of hostility, and that's the last thing we need.
So if you said at this point you don't want to paint with a broad brush all of bioethics, but there is obviously an undercurrent, and as you say, there is at the higher levels, this kind of stuff is not even blinked at by many bioethicists.
Yeah, the mainstream view, the people who are many of the most prominent bioethicists, particularly if they don't have that modifier in front of their name, the Peter Singers, I could throw out a bunch of very prominent names that your audience wouldn't understand. Many know of Peter Singer, but the people who are many of the most prominent people in the field at the top universities, at Oxford University, for example, they would go along with this in a heartbeat, and it's people who work in more religious fields probably wouldn't. People who are work for the Catholic Bioethics Center would not agree with this stuff. Leon Cass does not agree with this. But the prominent view, the mainstream view, the default setting in bioethics, while not unanimous, of course, does follow the Joseph Fletcher approach, either to a greater or a lesser extent, but it definitely is a more utilitarian approach and denying the intrinsic dignity and sanctity of human life. And those are not the people, I think, who should be making these kinds of decisions, because I don't think they reflect the views of the American people.
And where are the bioethicists? You mentioned Leon Cass, but where are the bioethicists who are bucking the trend here and saying, no, let's begin with the presumption that human life has intrinsic value and that one need not qualify to someone like Fletcher's 15th criteria to be considered a human being?
You will generally, although not universally, but you will generally see them at more religious universities. You'll see some at Notre Dame, for example. Georgetown has both very utilitarian bioethicists, even though it's a Catholic university, as well as more human rights bioethicists. There are a few places, secular universities, that will have human dignity bioethicists. There's a fellow out in California named Aaron, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his last name, who's a very strong opponent of assisted suicide, as an example. He's a psychiatrist and a bioethicist at UC Davis, just as an example. But most of the prominent ones, the ones who are you see published in the most prominent bioethical journals, tend to support that utilitarian approach.
Finally, Wesley, I believe that you live, if not in somewhere very near our nation's capital in the Beltway region there. Do our lawmakers need to be made aware of this and given a little 101 on what the laws that they may pass might imply for people in these situations?
Yes, and sometimes, you know, now that I moved here about a year ago, but I have actually participated in some of that process. The thing that I'm concerned about is I don't think that President Trump, other than on pro-life abortion issues, because, you know, pro-lifers helped get him into the White House, but I don't think he has really thought seriously about these issues. He has not appointed a bioethics commission to help advise him. And I would like him to, and do everything I can. I sometimes I feel like I'm sending up flares on the Titanic, you know, Hey, look over here. I live 10 miles from the White House. Look over at these flares that are flaring, you know. You have to pay attention to these issues because they're very important. And I know he's got a lot on his plate, but when you've got things such as CRISPR, genetic engineering, synthetic life, human cloning that has actually now been accomplished, being done, and they're about to make three parent embryos, these kinds of things, I do think that the president needs to pay attention, and the public policymakers. Some members of Congress certainly are involved in this, and some members, more liberals, tend to be opposed to the positions that I take, but I do think we need to have a national discussion because it's very important. This will affect in very fundamental ways the world that your children and your grandchildren live in, and the kind of health care they receive or don't receive.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Human Exceptionalism. He's a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine, and a recent column for First Things titled Joseph Fletcher's Dark Dreams Become Our Reality. We'll post a link to it and to his book, Culture of Death, under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Wesley, as always, thank you and keep up the good work.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Happy New Year.
When we come back, we're going to be teaching a Sunday school lesson on the Apostle Peter. There in Acts chapter 10, he has just been brought in proximity of Gentile territory, and pretty soon the Holy Spirit is going to not only urge, but in a threefold way, command him to go and meet with the Gentiles in the house of Cornelius. We'll talk about all of that with Pastor Tom Baker after this.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
In just a few short years, digital technology has revolutionized the way we live, work, and interact. But what does this mean for the church? In its January issue, the Lutheran Witness magazine looks at digital technology through Lutheran eyes, examining social media, online evangelism, podcasting, and the spiritual implications of these technological innovations for Christians. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Hello, I'm Pastor Daniel Quinn, Senior Pastor of Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas, inviting you to join us for divine service on Sundays at 8:15 or 11 a.m. Living Word is located at 9500 North Panther Creek Drive in The Woodlands, a community about 30 miles north of Houston. That's Living Word Lutheran Church, where we proclaim the living word of Christ that all who hear may walk in newness of life.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scair, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. we'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.